All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Welcome back to the Oasis podcast, episode 41. It is 41. Last week I said it was 39. I was forgetting about the mini episode I did with the message from Liam Gallagher. Yeah, that's right. I had an episode with a message from Liam Gallagher and I forgot about that. So that was 40 and this is 41. I've got a great interview for you later, which is with George Lewis, comedian and TV presenter, who did Celebrity Mastermind a couple of weeks ago now. And so it was really good to talk to George and talk about growing up and getting into Oasis and all that usual stuff that we bang on about over here. But yeah, so it was really good fun. Plus, obviously, the experience of going to Mastermind and revising for it and all that sort of stuff. So if you are stupid enough, like me and George, to go and do Mastermind, then give that a listen. It should give you some tips to at least not be a complete mess on the day, because we both avoided that somehow. First off, I just wanted to take a minute to mention Marky Smith, who died at the weekend. He's obviously a legendary figure in British music and Manchester music especially, and this is a podcast based around Manchester music, so it's only right to mention it. I'm not a massive Fall fan. I like a few of their tracks. It's not someone I've ever dug into hugely. I think most people are in a similar position, that they know of him and aware of him, heard a few songs, but maybe that's about as far as it goes. But I thought I'd just drop in here a little bit of the interview I did with Tom Hingley last year, around September. And he's talking about Marky Smith, because obviously the Inspirals did a couple of tracks with him. And yeah, I think it's quite prophetic what he says. So let's have a little bit of me talking to Tom Hingley.
Mad thing about the Inspirals is that so many of the kind of these legendary figures have sort of all surfaced around it, whether it's, you know, I mean, you mentioned, but we've mentioned earlier about Marky Smith playing with you.
And nobody said it was gonna be easy.
No one ever said it was gonna be easy.
And taking it down a white knuckle rider.
The pain to tease me, the barrier's broken. Climbing aboard on a white knuckle ride that shines my sights and the wheels are in motion.
No one said it was gonna be easy. I think you should realize which side of you are on.
You.
And that is a chapter of the book that is, you know, laugh out loud funny. Like having the, you know, that little kind of window into this guy's life. And, you
yeah,
know,
that's right. How it is. I mean, I think Mark's a genius, but I think the journalists tend to sort of talk about the good stuff and not the bad stuff. Whereas I just talk about it very honestly. I just talk about how it happened. I don't gild the lily. I just say what happened. And I find obsessing with someone like Mark, which is at some point, hopefully in the longest in future, you know, Mark won't be around anymore. And then BBC One and the Radio 4 programme will devote loads of time to talking about him, but they hate him now.
Yeah.
Because they don't talk about him now, you've got to remember people and worship people while they're around.
They never quite made it big commercially, but in every other respect, The Fall, led by Marky Smith, was simply huge, incredibly prolific, influential, with a massive cult following, the Musos band. The band was formed by Smith when he was just 19. He was working on Manchester docks, writing songs in his lunch break. Then he saw the Sex Pistols. He would later reflect that he fell into music rather than pursuing it.
I didn't want to be in a group, actually. I was just writing in my lunch hour and at work.
Marky Smith had his own unique style of delivery, often more speaking than singing. But he quickly rose to become an icon, first of the Manchester scene post-punk, and then beyond. His band changed lineup numerous times over its 40-year existence, but Smith, their beloved frontman, remained constant.
It was like a brilliant, contradictory, awkward, charming, character, who fronted The Fall, one of the most influential bands that came out of the punk and the post-punk period.
Famously difficult, with a history of drug and alcohol abuse, Smith remained nonetheless charismatic to his many fans, inspiring many bands that followed.
In many ways, if you look at the way that, you know, the Liam Gallaghers behave and, you know, Sean Ryder out of Happy Mondays, Marquis Smith, although a Salford lad, was very much the attitude of Manchester music.
Ill health in recent years led to Smith cancelling some shows. He died this morning, his legacy assured as a musical one-off, and to so many, quite simply, a legend.
So let's do some Oasis news, shall we? Lift the mood a little bit. Noel Gallagher has been on the promotional trail because It's a Beautiful World has officially been released as a single. Although in this modern world of Spotify and iTunes, I don't quite get what that means. If he could give us a CD single, please, with three amazing Oasis-level quality B-sides, that'd be great, but that's not happening. There is going to be a vinyl release of It's a Beautiful World with a couple of remixes on it. And if you go to stopcrayingyourheartout.com, there is an article that's been got, I think it's DJ Mag, that's been collated there. There's a reviewed a couple of those remixes, and it sounds quite interesting if you're into that sort of thing. And Noel's been on a promotional trail. He's done a couple of interviews. He was on Soccer AM, and he's done a couple of other bits. So let's have a little bit of him on Soccer AM.
Noel, as we all know, you're a massive Man City fan. So I'm going to get you to pick your dream five-a-side team of Man City players from the Premier League era.
Right.
So before we get started, what formation are you thinking of?
Did they have formations in five-a-side? It's a rigid keeper though, right?
Yeah, it's a keeper.
Right, and then there's just four.
Four wherever you want to play them.
I think it's just four playing, isn't it? Is this four like little David Silva type
David
fellas,
Silva. I thought yeah. David Silva would be in your team. Okay, so starting with your keeper, who'd you go with and go?
I'm going to go with Edison because he's been incredible. I think he'd be good at five-a-side because he could play as a defender as well. So he's, you know, play centre-half as well on a five-a-side pitch. But he's a beast.
Yeah, he is.
And I can't see much getting past him, to be honest.
Do you think that's big with Pep, that he wants all of his players to be ball players? Because he could almost play outfield, couldn't he, Edison? He's that good on the ball.
I think in the on record is saying that his ideal team would be 11 midfielders or 10 midfielders and a keeper. But then the whole thing harks back to the Ajax theory, doesn't it? Every player should be able to play in every position. But he's definitely put that team together. There's something else at the moment.
Mm. Okay, so Edison.
Meanwhile, Liam is still on holiday, but thankfully he's been giving us the occasional Twitter and Instagram update. We had him bombing around on a bike, and we've also had him enjoying a coconut and talking about coconuts. So here's Liam, coconuts.
Day one, off me coconut. Day two, off me fucking coconut. Day three, still off me coconut. Day four, off me fucking coconut. Day five, off me coconut. Still off me fucking coconut. Day seven, one's off its coconut. Day eight, still off me coconut. Day nine, man off his coconut. Day 10, woman off his coconut. Woman off her coconut. Day 11, child off his coconut. Day 12, the world off his coconut.
Mate.
But we have had some new music from an ex-Oasis member, which is Ride. Andy Bell of Ride and formerly of Oasis and of Hurricane Number One as well, and of briefly of Gay Dad, but we don't talk about that, has come back with new EP, which is quite cool. The album last year was Weather Diaries, and it was really good. I mean, I didn't really cover it on here, actually, but yeah, it was a great, because it's so busy with all the Liam and Noel stuff, but it's a really good album. I really enjoyed it. It got a few nods in the end of year awards, and it is a great piece of work. It's probably like maybe even their best ever album, and that's saying quite a bit, because I do really like a lot of the Ride stuff. But they're back with a new EP single, which is called Catch You Dreaming. On tomorrow's shore, you can see it now. It's coming to catch you dreaming. We've done nothing wrong. It's just who we are. Couple of other bits of news that have come up in the last couple of days. So I suppose the biggest thing, more and more dates are being announced for Liam in the summer, and there was a big announcement the other day, which is that Richard Ashcroft is going to be supporting Liam in a couple of Irish gigs. And then there was a announcement that Radio X were going to have an exclusive Liam Gallagher news at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. And people were speculating, oh, is this going to be announcing Richard Ashcroft for all the other dates as well, all the English dates? And yeah, it's actually that Liam is doing a rooftop show on the roof of Radio X next month for like 90 people, and you could got to phone into Radio X and try and win the competition. So yeah, that's just annoying. Not really what we wanted. But I'm sure that I'm sure that it will end up being Ashcroft. I mean, when you've got places like Finsbury Park, you know, you've got to have decent support there. So I'm hoping it's someone like Ashcroft, or if not Ashcroft himself. Although saying that, they're all sold out anyway, so it could be anyone. It doesn't really matter. But yeah, I'm guessing it will be Ashcroft. Liam's also playing in Sao Paulo in March. He's playing Benny Kassim. He's playing the Transmit Festival. So yeah, there's going to be loads of opportunities to see him in the summer. I'm just still holding out that he plays Truck Festival, which, as you know, if you listen to this, is the one just down the road from me that I go to every year. So yeah, that would be great. So come on, Liam, come on, Debbie, get booked into Truck. That's what you need to do. And as always, thanks to Louise at StopCryingHeartOut.com, which is the best Oasis news site. Just to let you guys know, I was actually in Manchester last week. I was actually there when I found out Marky Smith died, actually. And if you follow my Twitter, you'll see that I went to the studios of Radio 5 Live. A friend of mine, Will Cooper, who I mentioned on episode 1 as the guy who got me into Oasis all the way back in 1994, is one of the top bods up there. So I went to see him. And I also got some time with Colin Patterson, who's the entertainment reporter. And we did some recording, which is going to be really good. And then, me and Will sat down with also Sam Huxley, who works there. And we did some recording as well, had a chat about Oasis bass players. And then just also their interactions. Sam's interviewed Liam a few times as well. So I got some really good stuff while I was up there. Well, I hope I did. I haven't really listened back to it yet, but I think it's pretty good. So yeah, that'll come out to you. And also coming up soon, as booked in, is an interview with Mike Flowers, which I'm really excited about. I think it was first suggested to me like as a joke, get Mike Flowers on, but I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's an absolutely brilliant idea. I loved that Wonderwall. That was such a revelation to me when I first heard that. And I think his stuff is great. Like, yes, it's got a comedy edge to it, but most of the best music has got a comedy edge. Oasis have got a bit of comedy about them. You know, you don't sing about lasagna. You don't sing about Round Our Way the Birds Are Minging if you haven't got a bit of humour to you. So I'm really looking forward to speaking to Mike Flowers. And if you have got any questions for Mike, then do get in touch on the social media or on email to oasispod@gmail.com. And the Is Your Hair Real? Where do I get your haircut? Yeah, that's been said, so don't bother with that. But anything else would be great, so do get in touch. Bye.
street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it before, but you've never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you.
One other thing I said I would do, I was closing in on 3,000 followers on Twitter, and so I said that I would give the 3,000th follower a shout out on the podcast. Now, I actually haven't got a clue, I forgot, so I don't know who was my 3,000th follower, but so I'll give a few shout outs from people that have followed me recently. I'm up to now like 3,090 odd, so I'm not going to shout out 90 people, but just to say that Ricky Hatton followed me. As you may know, I'm a big boxing fan. I'd love to get Ricky Hatton on. I've mentioned it a couple of times now. I've sent him a couple of messages on Instagram, on Twitter. He hasn't got back in touch, but come on, Ricky, you've got to do the podcast. So he followed me around that time, but also has followed me is Hal the Hornet at Hal underscore Moller, Stuart Lyle at Lyle1S, Vapor Trail at Vapor Trail 299, Evan Kane, Ev underscore Kane 9, Stephen Kinsella at Skinsella 7, Dev McCormack at Deck 1878, Jordan Ross at Urban Glory BP, Bridges at George Bridges 17, Doncha 7 at Curran Dennis, Stephen at S underscore O'Mahony 16, Will Robertson, who is at Will Robertson, Mayju, who is at Supersonic MS, Daniel Hurst, who is at Artois 69, Kane Thomas, who is at underscore Kane Thomas, Tom Chitty, who is at Chitty, and Kieran Brennan, who is at Kieran underscore Brennan. So I'm sorry if you were actually the 3,000th follower. I haven't mentioned you. I think they were all around about the 3,000 point. Anyway, so there you go.
I love it. Room for everybody here. Yes, all are welcome. Yes, indeed. I love them. Fun. Nice. Life. Youth. Beautiful. I'm all for it.
Anyway, enough of my yakking. Let's move on to this interview with George Lewis. So I hope you guys enjoy this. I'll be back afterwards to wrap it up. But for now, here is, after this brief musical interlude, it will be me with George Lewis.
They say, Georgie, Georgie, keep your feet on the ground. Georgie, Georgie, when you listen to the sound. Georgie, Georgie, put a light on your name.
So, welcome to the Oasis podcast, George Lewis. How you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you, mate. It's good to be on. I've heard your voice quite often recently.
That's weird.
Too much. So
I've been coming in your ears quite a lot, have I?
Yes, exactly that. Yeah. Yeah, you were all I listened to in the build up to Mastermind. So I'm sick of you.
Well, that would be for a little bit longer, and then you can just forget about Oasis forever, or for at least a while.
Yeah.
Let's just cover that off. So yeah, so you were recently, it was broadcast a week or so ago, you were on Mastermind.
Yes.
Now you were on the Celebrity Mastermind, which is like similar to Junior Mastermind, really.
But easier.
So everyone will have seen it. I mean, it was really good fun. I mean, just tell me about that. How did it come about, and why Oasis?
Yeah, I mean, well, I got this call to do it off my agent. They asked me if I wanted to do it, and I mean, I was surprised, probably as surprised as everyone that I was asked to do it. But I thought, I mean, definitely, it's going to... It felt like that was something that everyone knows Mastermind, don't they? And that's that's something that my nana knows about, and it's going to be on BBC One. And I thought, yeah, I'm definitely up for it. And then it was only after accepting it that I thought, you know, I've really opened myself up here to humiliation, you know, because as you know, I mean, you've been on it, and as you know, I mean, there is a worry that you turn up and you're not going to know anything, or you're just going to lose all the answers.
Fall to bits, yeah.
Completely fall to bits, yeah. So when they asked me what I wanted to do, I I said Oasis. I was worried that they might say no to that because I know that they turn down things if they've been done before or if similar things are on. But no, they were well up for that. So I thought that's brilliant. Plus, it gave me a chance to really wallow in Oasis because I've always... I think maybe you've mentioned this on the podcast before as well. You do feel a bit guilty sometimes when you just spend all your time listening to Oasis because you think there's, you know, there's new music out there and you should give something new a chance. But this was a real excuse for just guilt-free living Oasis for the past month, and it's been fantastic.
It's research. I'm allowed.
Exactly. Yeah, it's my job.
Oh, God, yeah. And so are you... But the thing is, you know what it reminds me of? Did you ever see that film Super Size Me? Morgan Spurlock, the McDonald's film?
Yeah.
The mad thing was, at the end of it, they were like, well, how, you know, what do you think? Are you sick of McDonald's? He's like, you know what? I'm not. I'm actually quite missing... Yeah. Having McDonald's all the time. And so, you know...
It's that, things. Isn't it? Yeah.
Are you still... Are you like... When, so once the, you know, it had been recorded, did you just go like, oh, right, that's it, I'm sick of it, no more Oasis? Or were you kind of like, I need my fix, man, I'm on this every day now?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Oasis are my Big Macs now. It's just, I've got to wean myself off it. It's great because I suppose when you sort of read and reread some of the books and listening to some of the stuff on the podcast as well, there's things that I'm learning for the first time as well. Sure. I mean, what was good listening to the podcast is all the sort of stuff that maybe I've conveniently ignored in the past, but all the stuff like the plagiarism and things like that.
You know, that's... I don't like that word. Let's just soften that word a little bit. Let's just say being inspired.
yeah, heavy inspiration. But like the stuff with the real people and things like that. It's that a lot of that was new to me, and I was. It's surprising, you know, isn't it? But well, maybe not surprising, but it's great, and it's great to get lost into all that stuff and reading. I read Paolo's book a couple of times. I think that's for me. That's the best Oasis book that I've read. I just thought that was brilliant.
It's the best written. I mean, Paolo is such a brilliant writer. You know, I was rereading a bit of it the other day. And, you know, just the way he starts it off when he's talking about Peggy Gallagher, but he's like doing it like it's a novel. You know what I mean? And Peggy sat there in the field. You know, you think, this is another level, Paolo.
when I read that for the first time, when I first read that bit, I thought, what the hell is this? Like, I thought,
this isn't helping me at Mastermind.
No, I was like, I need chart positions. But actually, when I got into it, I thought that was fantastic. I was reading the other, the book by, what's he called, Robbo, Ian Robertson.
Yeah,
and that I enjoyed that book, but he's a bit of an odd guy, isn't he? He comes across his stories are always like, you know, when Alan Partridge tells a story, and it's always like, needless to say, I had the last laugh.
It's always,
they're always like that.
Right, I'll tell you an anecdote. In 1975, I was catching the London train from Crewe Station. It was very crowded. I found myself in a last-minute rush for the one remaining seat with a tall, good-looking man with collar-length hair. It was the 70s. Buckaroo. When I sat down on the chair, I looked up and realised it was none other than Peter Purvis. It was at the height of his Blue Peter fame. He said, "You jammy bastard," and quick as a flash, I replied, "Don't be blue, Peter." Needless to say, I had the last laugh. Now, fuck off.
It's a little bit. I think he's, you know, he's been possibly one to rewrite history a little bit. Whereas I don't get the impression with Paolo. I think there's an honesty to what, and obviously, you know, unless you've audio recorded things, you know, when Paolo will play off, you know, a conversation between Noel and Liam, well, it's not going to be exactly word perfect because he didn't record it. And so, but it's probably pretty accurate and it's giving the flavour, isn't it? Whereas that's fine. You get a bit creative license there, but it's when you get into the, yeah, like you said, like, oh, you came across very well in that exchange.
Yeah, he's always the coolest guy in the conversation, isn't he?
Yeah, and if you're in a room with Liam Gallagher, you're not the coolest guy.
I know. No, yeah, I always thought in parlors, they're always, I always think they're really, those conversations are really convincingly written, aren't they?
Yes.
I always thought, it's like, I mean, he's either Rain Man or he's just a very good writer, because it's as if he has recorded conversations,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think he did. I mean, from when I spoke to him, it sounds like he was sat up until what I think he described.
I remember. Yeah, and he'd just go back and scribble it all down, wouldn't he? Yeah.
Furiously scribbling, you know, trying to remember as much as he could. Yeah, what a great book. And what about Tony's? Was Tony McCarroll's book on the list?
So that was. So as you probably, I think you've discussed it as well on the podcast before, you have a bit of a reading list, don't you, for Mastermind. So I've read Tony's in the past, but that wasn't on my list. So I read it years ago, and I don't really remember it that much. I remember enjoying it because it just felt like, again, that was a time when it was just a completely different view of Oasis and what they're like, and especially Noel. It felt like, because at first, when you first into Oasis, everyone thinks, oh, Noel's the good guy and Liam's the bad boy, and that's it's as simple as that. But when you learn more about it, it's not really a case, is it? But
yeah, there's definitely been, especially, you know, like we talked about, you know, real people, and you know, and the way that certain members have been treated over the years, you know, I think Noel can be pretty pretty ruthless, you know.
Yeah.
I think anyone that gets that level of a success, you know, typically, unless you're a really good guy, like someone like, you know, Billy Bragg, you know, as I mentioned, he's one of my heroes, and when you read his book, it's like, you know, and I tore up the agreement with the record company to save people's jobs. Like, oh,
yeah.
What a thoroughly nice book, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Noel, I think he gets paid first, and then if there's money left over, you might grab some if you're lucky.
Yeah, but I know. And you watch it, and then sometimes you hear stuff like that, and you think, oh, come on, man, that's not on. And then you watch, like, the film and stuff, and you see how he's doing all the work when everyone else is just playing football and pissed in the pub. And you think, yeah, fair enough, actually.
Fair,
you know, that's
When you get the songs together for the album, you brought them to the band. Were you surprised at the input the band gave to the songs for this album, even more so than 1 and 2? In that, like, you had demo tapes and they did a lot to them, or did they? Are they all yours now?
I can't remember now, Dave. What happened? I remember giving him the tape. No, I'll tell you what happened. I remember giving him the tapes. Not this May, the May gone last May 1996.
Yeah.
And they had the tapes for months and months and months, and then going into the studio and setting all the gear up and starting. And I said, right, and we started to play one song. And everyone just stood there and looked at me like that and went, oh, what's the chord then? And I'm like, well, you've had the tape for like a year or something, you know. Isn't it about time you've not wrote them down or anything? Well, no. But, well, what have you been doing in your house, you know what I mean? What have you been doing? It's like, well, they just get a bit lazy sometimes, them boys.
Do you think if we look at, like, I mean, most of the focus of attention obviously is on you two guys, but just take Giggsy for the album itself. Do you think somebody like Giggsy, Bonehead or Alan, but in particular Giggsy, maybe hasn't got enough praise for some of the things he did in terms of the album?
No, he's got too much. He didn't do anything. No, I'm joking, good. No, probably has, but I mean, you know. I mean, what can you say apart from say he's a great bass player and he plays on your songs? I mean, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, put him in the Bass Players Hall of Fame alongside Bill Wyman or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, it's funny. But the, just to cover it off. So you have to tell them, okay, these are the, like, the three books. It was three books and I did it. Like, these are the three books I'm going to use. And then basically the question writers go off and come up with the questions based on those three books. And so how I did it, basically, when I did the mod scene and I got through to the second round and I did Billy Bragg, I basically read the book, and every time I came up to something, I thought, huh, that would be interesting. If I was a question setter, I'd make that a question. So I then did a flashcard and I wrote, you know, on this album, what was this? You know, or like on Billy Bragg, Billy Bragg, he first got played by John Peel because he heard John Peel say on the radio he was hungry. So Billy Bragg bought him a takeaway mushroom biryani because he knew he was a vegetarian and drove into the studios of Radio 1 and said, oh, I've got this mushroom biryani for John Peel and here's my record. Can you play it, please? And he played it. You know,
that would have been quite a long question.
How amazing is that?
But that's a great bit of knowledge, yeah.
But it's a cool little story, right? And so I'm thinking, yeah, yeah. As I'm a question setter, I'm reading that book and I'm going, what a cool little thing. I'll make a question about that.
Yeah.
And then so I wrote that down. And so it turned out when they started reading the questions back to me, both Mod and Billy Bragg, and the fact that you're not allowed to jump in, right, which is so annoying.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's so annoying. And, so you're not allowed to jump in, so you have to sit there and listen to the whole question. And I'm sat there like, oh, no, this, you know, and it was almost like we were reading the cards, you know, reading my cards that I'd written for myself. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, so I have to thank you for this because I remember you mentioning that technique and I thought, oh, that's good. I didn't know the mushroom biryani bit. But I remember you said about the reading it as if you're the guy asking the questions and then writing them down. So that's what I did. I picked out things that might be questions, wrote them down, and got my wife to test me.
Did she have to pretend to be John Humphreys?
Yeah, she looks just like him, so it's easy.
And was one of the questions that you picked out was who was the host of MTV's Most Wanted?
I mean, that is bizarre, isn't it? I mean, maybe it's not, but to me that seemed like a really weird question because that is actually when he gave me the answer, Davina McCall, like it did ring a bell. I think I probably read that one time, but to me it wasn't like a moment in Oasis. It wasn't like the fact it was her was not really a. It was kind of irrelevant to the Oasis story.
As you may have guessed, we've got Oasis here in the studio. It's Liam on vocals, Noel on guitar, and Paul Bounid on keyboards. Bounid, and in French, that is actually tête de os, isn't it?
No.
Yes. Tête d'os. There you go. See, learning a bit of French as well. Most Wanted is a bilingual show. Right, so they've got a debut album this year, thank God. Little Robbie wrote out these notes. Oh, and we got a fax here about Robbie's voice as well. Robbie, could you say something?
Hello.
He's gotten all shy. Come here, Robbie. Come here. Say something sexy.
Hello,
Davina. Oh, that's lovely. See, you said hello, Davina. Anyway, Robbie's written me some notes, and they've got a new album out, their first album, August the 30th. And we think it's the most fantastic album. Look, it's definitely maybe. I like that title. It's lovely, isn't it? 30th of August. See, we got it before it's actually out in the shops. And apparently you admittedly say that you pinch ideas from other bands.
Yeah.
But we reckon, right, you pinch the best ones from each one, you see, and make it your own. That's the best way to do it.
You don't pinch them, you gently squeeze them.
Yeah, exactly. You see, you've done the right thing. And the song you're going to play is called Whatever. And it's not on the album, right?
No,
it's not. No, you see, so it's an extra special song because it's not on the album either. So here are Oasis, especially for us on Most Wanted.
I'm free to be whatever I choose, and I'll sing the blues if I want. I'm free to say whatever I like, if it's wrong or right, it's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus it's weird because they throw ones in like that and then they throw like really, really easy questions in where you think, is this a trick? Like,
yeah.
Where the answers blur or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but did they have a chart battle with in 1995? And you're like, seriously?
Yeah, exactly. So that is a question that I am not kicking myself for getting wrong.
Exactly.
The one that I am kicking myself for getting wrong is, as you know, I mean, obviously I know the answer to that was Songbird. That
although,
I know that.
Although,
oh, yeah. Right,
so just this, for people that haven't seen this, and I think it's been put on YouTube now. So if you're not, if you're in the UK, it's on iPlayer. If you're not in the UK, it's you know, a dodgy version. It might have been pulled down by now, but it's on YouTube. So go and just search for George's name and Mastermind, you'll find it, I imagine. But the question was, well, you tell me, do you remember what the question was word for word? Because someone
else
picked it.
So
it was something along the lines of, on Heathen Chemistry, what's the track written by Liam? Or something.
Yeah.
And as any good Oasis fan knows, there are three tracks written by Liam on Heathen Chemistry.
Yes. Yeah, so what do you reckon? We should ask for a rematch or something. But yeah, either way, I gave the... That was one of those where actually I thought, like, you know that the answer that they're looking for is Songbird, don't you?
Yeah.
But it was one of those, you know, when you're in that situation, I remember before I went on, I thought, if there's something that I don't know, or something, if I even think it's going to take me a few seconds to root it out from my head, it's better just to answer a wrong question and move on.
Correct.
So
yeah.
That's why I said Little James.
Yes, which we know. I feel like comic book guy here from The Simpsons. Which we know was actually on The Children of Giants. You know.
Yes.
But
that would have been good if I'd have answered one of the other tracks.
Yeah.
We could have sent the program into disrepute, couldn't we?
Yeah, well, there was one on my mod scene where, I mean, it was, I got the question right, but it was like, which band was Ronnie Wood a member of? And the answer was The Birds. And he said, oh, Thunderbirds, yes. And I was like, well, no, they were like briefly known as the Thunderbirds for like 6 months, but they were known as The Birds.
No, stop the timer.
Stop. but they gave me the question right anyway, but I polished face like, what? Like that. But anyway.
Yeah.
But no, cool. So anyway, but number one thing is you know, the Davina McCall question. I mean, come on, like, you know, when I watched it, I was like, oh, it's that guy, like the craggy face guy who was Ray Coakes.
Because I remember
he was the host of that show. But then having then rewatched the little video of it, yeah, he was off and Davina McCall was on. So
yeah,
but no one's, as I say, I doubt many people would have got that at all. And then that little James one was, the question was wrong. So I think that you've done the Oasis fandom proud there, George.
Well, oh, good, thanks. Cheers, man.
And and then so the rest of the show, you did good in general knowledge as well, and you won.
Yeah, I scraped it. I won on fewest passes. So on a technicality.
So there you go. If you'd said pass instead of little James...
Yeah, well, that was exactly that, yeah. And that's when I didn't know one of the, my final general knowledge question I didn't know the answer to. So yeah, I answered Wonderwall to that, and yeah, I think I won by one pass, so yeah, I'm happy.
I don't think I've told this story, but on my second round, I knew I didn't have a prayer. I was against like proper quizzes, and I'm like, look, this, I just may as well not even bother.
Yeah. Right?
Because, you know, I'm a geek and I know my stuff and my general knowledge is okay, but I'm not like a serious quizzer like the proper people that just go on these, you know, they go on the quiz circuit constantly.
Yeah.
And so I knew I didn't have a chance, especially in my Billy Bragg round. I think if I'd like gone into the second round three questions ahead or something, I might have thought, I'm in for a shout here. But I was already a couple behind before I went to the second round. So I knew I didn't have a prayer. And, you know, everyone's got a mate at school who, like, if something stupid was going to happen to him, it's going to be them. Well, I might not be able to include this, actually. But my mate, who is a...
Name him!
Is George Rice. Okay, so George Rice is the guy that, you know, if someone's going to get locked out of their room on holiday, or they're going to lose their wallet, or they're going to, you know, fall down the stairs, or something, it's going to be George. And so we, as like a group of dumb mates, would, like, write Rice places, you know, just to as, like, a wind-up on George. And I'd said to the guys, like, right, if I don't know an answer... I'm going to say Rice. And they were like, mate, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So I knew I was behind. And then in my general knowledge in my second round, there's some question about, like, which perennial bush, da-da-da-da-da. And I went, Rice? now, anyone watching it would be like, what? Who would think?
Yeah.
What? But anyway, I you know, and all my, like, you know, to about 17 people in Didcot, I was an absolute legend. Everyone else,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I know. I thought that with, when you, that's the only risk, isn't it, of answering a stupid answer. People think it's, you seriously think that that weather phenomenon is a underwall.
Yeah, no, so I think you did. You crushed that. That was a really good play, actually. But how was the overall process? Was it good fun? Did you get to chat to John Humphreys much, or was it just like in and out?
Yeah, it was. It was good fun, actually. But so I don't know if it was the same when you did it, but they filmed. I think they filmed four in a row.
Yeah,
when we were there, and then after, I think ours was the fourth, and after ours there was like a special one with John Motson as well. He was playing, he was like doing the John Humphreys role. So it was quite quick. It was fun, but it was like, usually when you're sort of filming something, you go on, there's loads of build up, you do everything like five times, and it's quite a slow process. But this was, you just introduced, and then moments later you're sat in the chair and the timer's on. And it's
like, wait, what is this?
Yeah. I'm not ready. So that's the weird thing. And it's just surreal, isn't it? You just suddenly sat there. It's such a well-known set, and you just suddenly sat there. And I mean, I felt like a just blacked out, just answer. I didn't remember afterwards what all the questions were or anything like that. It's just
it's
no sense of anything.
Women, when they give birth, the body releases endorphins that make them forget about the trauma, so they'll give birth again. That's it, isn't it?
Basically, that's good.
Yeah, it's our equivalent.
Oh, that's quite good, actually, because my wife is pregnant, so I'll be able to tell her that I've been through something similar. I'm sure she'll like that.
For me, it was just like sitting down. It was so dark, and there was just this bright light behind John Humphreys. So I just remember seeing this like glowing white hair of John Humphreys. That was
this
the main
ethereal
thing
figure. That's amazing.
Randomly like asking questions about the mod movement. Well, that's cool. But and if you had like good feedback, was everyone impressed by you?
It's been good feedback. I think I'm so happy that I won it, because I wouldn't have minded not winning, but it's obviously it's the first thing people asked when I told them that I was on it, and it feels like once you've got, like, I've got that trophy now, that if that's the peak of my career, that's fine, you know. I'm happy, and yeah, I'm just happy that I didn't humiliate myself as well.
That's it, isn't it? That's as long as that's exactly what I said. As long as I don't completely humiliate myself, I'm fine.
And that's all we can.
That's all we care about. You just set the goals really high. Cool. Good. Well, you know. Well. Well done. It was fantastic. But taking it back then. So was you like, you know, was music a big part of your life, and was Oasis a big part of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so from very early on. So I'm from Stockport, which is like Greater Manchester. It's not that far from like Burnage and stuff. And it's I was born in 1987. So by the time I was old enough to be into music, Oasis were already, you know, big.
Yeah.
And I think So What's the Story was the second tape that I ever owned. I really wish it was the first, but
what was the first?
The first was it was this. You might not remember this. It was this song by, I think they were called bubble gum or something like that, and it was called Trouble. It went, uh-oh, we're in
shampoo.
Trouble. Oh, shampoo, yeah, yeah. Do you remember that?
Shampoo. No, that's fine. Shampoo were also, they were big Mannix fans. They're in the video for Little Baby Nothing.
Oh yes, because you've spoken about this on the podcast, haven't you? Because didn't they copy the video? Is that right?
I don't think so. I think this is your postmark my delirium, mate.
I'm still in a punch drunk. I don't know what's going on. But you don't matter. That's not as embarrassing as I thought it was going to be. Okay. So that was the first. I just remember that was the first tape I owned. But yeah, the second was What's the Story? But yeah, I think I was into. I mean, I don't know what age I was, but I was into Oasis for as long as I can remember. Because I remember my mum had a friend who was a bloke who used to. It sounds really weird saying it now, but she had a friend who was a bloke who used to like take us out and on our bikes and things like that. And he had kids as well that were a similar age. So, talking about this now, actually, it makes it seem like maybe they were more than friends. But I don't think they were. I think they were just two single people.
Consenting adults.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, come on. We're just free, single, consenting adults. But no, he had kids as well. So we used to always hang out together. And the lad Nick, he was into... Well, he was into two things. He was really into Oasis and army stuff. so he got me into, well, he got me into both those things. I didn't really stick with the army thing. But I remember we used to just listen to Oasis around his house for just hours on end. Dressed in full camouflage, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's probably like the earliest sort of music memory. And then since then I don't think I ever stopped being really, it felt like everyone was really into Oasis. I know now people look back and people always say, oh, it was either Oasis or Blur, but it never was like that at my school. It was just everyone liked Oasis. But yeah, and then I think the first time I saw them was in 2000, which was at the Reebok Stadium in Bolton. That was because they were being I think one of the supports was Johnny Marr, and then the other was the Happy Mondays, and my dad is quite good mates with Paul Ryder, bass player in the Happy Mondays. So I think we got tickets that way. But that was the first time that I saw them. And I mean, that's a really clear memory as well.
That's when you were about 13 then, if that you're born 86.
Yes, that's it, yep.
Wow.
See, mastermind.
Well,
straight away you're on that.
2000 takeaway 87.
Yeah.
This is a tough one, but yeah. We got there. But yeah, great. And so how was that experience? As a 13-year-old as well, that must have been pretty shocking if that was your first gig.
Yeah, it was. Well, it wasn't actually my first gig. I'd seen Celine Dion a couple of years earlier.
you tend to have a very steep curve here.
Yeah.
You know, jump into Morning Glory and then Celine Dion to Oasis.
Exactly, yeah. But obviously, Oasis wasn't as rowdy as Celine. No, it was. I do remember it feeling like, because it was like, it felt like an all day festival as well with the support act. Yeah. It was in the summer, and you're there early, and you're just amongst, what we know to be sort of just all these Oasis fans. So everyone's there. Everyone's in the standard issue
kit of an Oasis fan. They've all got the same haircuts and they're all dressed the same. And I just loved it. I just thought, this is brilliant. And I thought, you know, I'm one of them. But yeah. I was just a child.
I love it. Well, yeah. You know what I always loved? It was like sort of turning around and sort of just going on tiptoes and just looking backwards. And they're going, wow, look at this.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you see like live videos... And just like you see all the people jumping up and down in unison and thinking,
yeah,
I've been there. I've been part of that.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Yeah, it's that feeling of, I think that's especially Oasis. I think that's why they're great, is they bring people together like that, and probably people who don't really, I don't know, they haven't really done that for other bands. It's sort of like a football crowd, isn't it?
Exactly,
We're all there. We're all on one team, and we're all the same. I mean, it was just fantastic. And then, I think I saw him a few times after that, but that was the big one.
Well, am I everyone's fucking daddy or something? You, Elvis, hey, get off the fucking speakers. Geezer, get down, you silly cunt. Hey, mate, hey, you won't be going on till you get down. If you don't get down, you get your head kicked in by these cunts down here, probably. There we go, lad. So, you know what I mean? We've got all night. Whoever's wearing the security out front's just gonna get fucking sacked anyway. Let's go on with it.
Get
down, have a dance, you know. Right, throw the cunt out the fucking door, make him buy a shirt on the way out before you do it. On a poster.
Have you ever met them?
No. So I've the only time I've come across them is when it was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I was cycling with my mate down the road, and we saw Liam like just walking down the pavement with his then missus, Nicole. And
that's Appleton, yep.
Yeah, and they were walking the other way, and I was like, "Oh, Alex, it's Liam, he's right there." And I was like, "What do we do? Do we stop or do we like?" And my mate was just like, "No, man, no, we're not doing that." So I was like, "What do I do?" I was like, "I can't let this pass." But I thought, I don't want to bother him. So I was, just as I was cycling past, I just went, "Love you, Liam," and he sort of turned around, because I'm always scared that. If you meet one of your heroes, they're going to be a tosser and it's going to ruin everything. Yeah. But he just sort of turned around and gave a thumbs up and was like, "Nice one, man." And I thought, "Oh, what a guy." And I thought, we'll leave it at that. I don't want to ruin it. But what's annoying is my wife keeps seeing Noel around. Like, I think she saw him like 2 weeks ago, just near where we live. He was just walking along with a takeout. So that makes me furious. Because I think if it was that situation and we were walking along the street, I'd probably... I think, especially now, actually, now that I can mention Mastermind. Well, yes, there, exactly.
Absolutely. Well, and the other thing, I suppose, when you saw Liam that time, had you already sort of become like well known?
This is pre everything. So,
okay.
It was just, I was just some guy on his bike, some fanboy.
I suppose that's the tricky one, isn't it? Because if you just go up as a fan and just say like, oh, Liam, I love you, man, or whatever, yeah. And it's just a fan thing and that's fine. Whereas, and if you're super famous, then you can go up and be, and you'd be like, oh yeah, you know me, I'm, whereas when you're like, you know, a bit famous, like you are, George, if you go up and be like, oh, Liam, I'm a comedian and I do these presenting gigs.
That's the worst thing of all, because, yeah, exactly. It's not famous if you have to go up to someone and explain to them why. and then if you open up with that, it's like, yeah, so what, mate? So I think, yeah, I wouldn't, but I think now with the Mastermind thing, I've got a good in. So I'm just sort of hanging around the streets, just waiting for my next opportunity. The one thing actually, so when I was gonna. When I was weighing up in that few seconds whether to go up to Liam and say something, I had a tattoo at the time. I say at the time because it's since been covered up, but I had a tattoo that said "Be here now," and I thought, "Oh, this could be good." You know, I can show him that. And the reason I've had it covered up is because it was done really badly, and it looked like it said "Ben here now." So everyone was always like, "Who's Ben? Why do you want him so much?"
Wait, and it's not pointing to any particular area of your body, is it? Yeah. Ben, here now.
Yes, it's above the crotch,
above the navel.
So I had it. Yeah, recently I had it covered up, but I thought that would have been either a good in, or it would have been like. Again, to reference Alan Partridge, but
Alan Partridge.
Yeah,
that's exactly where my mind went. Well.
Yeah. So probably, I think the way it played out was best.
He would have called you a mentalist and run away.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good. So you're growing up in Stockport. You're into your music, and then so before you got into comedy and things, you were a copywriter, right? Is that?
Oh yes,
advertising.
Exactly, yeah. So that's why I moved to London. So I finished university and I was doing a few things, like I did a bit of acting in a couple of things, and then I came and did like a bit of work experience at like an advertising agency in London for like a couple of weeks, and then they just kept me on for ages, and then that turned into a proper job, and it's quite a good job, because I always wanted to write, like ever since seeing The Office, I always wanted to write a sitcom and be in that sitcom. That was like, that's always been the thing that I've most wanted to do, and doing copywriting is not, it's quite a job that sits quite well with that, because you just sat there all day writing ideas and writing scripts that will hopefully be funny and things like that. So I did that for quite a few years, and that's what brought me to London. And then I started doing comedy in London.
Mm-hmm. And was that just something you'd always wanted to do, or was there like a particular spur that was like, right, I'm going to go to this open mic or whatever?
Oh yeah, I mean, it wasn't something I always wanted to do. No, it was I really wanted. I always wanted to write comedy, like I say, and write and be in a sitcom, but I never really thought about stand-up. But then I read a thing by Stephen Merchant, and he said, oh, the best way to get into sitcom writing is through stand-up comedy. And I remember thinking, that sounds horrible. Like, I just remember thinking, why would anyone want to stand on a stage and say, oh, I think this is funny, do you? and the risk of public humiliation, I thought it just sounds awful. But then, because I was living in London anyway, I thought, I don't want to
get old and regret not trying something. So I thought, sure, I'll just do one gig. So I'll book into an open mic, I'll do one gig, 5 minutes of material, and I won't tell anyone about it. And then if it goes terribly, I never need to tell anyone that I did it, and then it's done, wow, then it's out. So I did that. I booked into this gig like a month ahead, underneath a pub near Tottenham Court Road, and I spent the month like writing these probably quite crappy jokes looking back, but mm-hmm. just writing anything that I thought was funny, and then I went and did it, and I just remember being so nervous, like just I just wanted to throw up in the week leading up to it, and plus I'd not told anyone, like I didn't tell my girlfriend, who's my now wife. I didn't even
really,
yeah, I didn't tell her. I'd just been telling her that I was like working late and stuff like that. And then yeah, wow. I did the gig, and it went well at the time. I thought it went really well. Looking back, it was probably awful, but yeah,
you weren't bottled up. Yeah. Once again, it's a bonus. Low expectations.
That's it. Yes, that's the key to happiness, isn't it? but yeah, it went well enough. So I got that back that night, and I said, "Listen, I've not been telling the truth. I've not been working late." And she was like, "What?" And I was like, "Oh no. I've done this gig." And there, she thought it was funny. She thought it was brilliant. So then I thought, right, I'll just do 5 gigs and see how I feel after that. And then you do 10, and then you do 100. And then as time goes by, you just get better and better, and you enjoy it more and more. And you do better and bigger gigs. And then mm-hmm. eventually it becomes your job. And then mm-hmm. it's brilliant.
So there was like a tipping point where you're like, there's a tipping point where you're like, you know what, I can make enough money from this now to not do that thing.
Yeah, I think there's a point. So, because in comedy, there's the whole start of your career. You have no idea if you're, I mean, you can tell if you're doing well or not because you can tell how well a gig goes, but you have no idea if you're good enough to like make it your career. And it's only when like you start like doing well in competitions and things like that, and then eventually when you get signed by an agent, then that makes it feel like, oh, you know, it's the endorsement of someone else saying you're not shit.
Okay.
And then eventually, yeah, it turns into something. But I mean, you're only ever as good as good as your last gig, really. So you can be flying high and then have a terrible one, and it's a very anxious life to lead. Yeah. But it's brilliant.
But you seem like quite a jovial person as well. You don't appear to be fulfilling the stereotype of comedians. As soon as they get off stage, are these dark, horrible, you know, self-conflicted, self-doubted, evil, vicious people?
Oh yeah. Well, wait. Yeah. After this phone call, I'll just lie in the dark all day. I'm not like that. I think I always think, you know, if comedy didn't make me happy, then there's no point in me doing it. So yeah, I think I like to think I'm generally quite a happy guy. I've got a nice life. I've got a nice wife, good family, everything's good.
Well, that's very disappointing. I want a bit of heartbreak and anger, and you know that's a good story.
I mean, we can run that again if you want, and I'll
if you wouldn't I'll mind. Can you tell me about overcoming cancer? That does really well in the listening figures.
Oh God,
figures.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I should have come. That was a good episode, though. That was really good.
I'm just putting out there on Twitter now. Anyone else got any life-threatening diseases?
Yeah.
I'm just hanging around.
Great
hospitals.
For the numbers.
Do you like Oasis?
Yeah.
That's the classic combination. But no, that's all good. And so with the stand-up comedy, then obviously you've got you build the confidence, you're able to speak to people, speak in front of people, not fall to bits, which perfectly leads into presenting, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's, this sort of came out of nowhere, because there's certainly not a standard route to a comedy career, but there are sort of, traditionally, there's a few things that you do on TV in the sequence, which are like comedy gigs that you get on TV. So when I got offered this audition for Extra Gear, which is the sort of companion show to Top Gear, that kind of came out of the blue, because I mean I do like cars, but I'm not like a car expert. I'm certainly not a car expert, and I'd never spoken about cars or anything. So it came out, and in fact, so they sent a thing saying, "Is George interested in cars? And maybe he could do a little write up about his car history." So I thought, well, there's no point in me pretending to be, hugely knowledgeable about cars. But I've always owned cars, and I always remember the shame of my mum's car. She drove a Lada. Yeah. In fact, so,
the joke car.
Exactly. That was it. Yeah. And she drove a Lada. I remember begging for her to get rid of it. and eventually she did, and she got a new Lada. That was what she replaced it with.
No!
Yeah, I know. But it was like a Lada Estate. So I was like, oh, go back to the old Lada.
Well, that was one of those things with Lada never got the rebrand, as far as I'm aware, because no. Skoda was the joke. You know,
yes.
Skoda and Lada were the jokes in the 80s and 90s. And then Skoda was suddenly cool. And I was like, well, hold on, because I'm not a big petrol head car person at all. And then suddenly you're hearing like, oh, yeah, the new Skoda or Octavia. And then it's like, wait, did I miss a meeting?
Yeah.
Skoda's okay now.
Yeah, I know.
But Lada never had that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they... it's funny, isn't it, how the rules change of cool, and you can certainly lose touch with it. But Larders didn't have that. Although I do think you don't see many of them about now, and I do think now they look a bit. If I saw one now, I think it looked a bit cooler than I did back then. But anyway,
is that the whole way that everything comes back round into fashion?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I just sort of told them about that, and told them about the cars that I'd had, which have all been terrible and stuff. And then they got back and said that they liked that, and they asked me to go for a screen test. So that's a bunch of people go along and you sort of do a version of the show presenting it, but to a huge empty hangar with no one in it.
Great.
Yeah, no, it's a really weird experience that. And you sort of... You're sort of hustled in as well, because you're not really meant to know who else is doing the screen test. So that's a bizarre situation. But then you do that, they film that, and then it goes away for ages. And I remember thinking, because I'd not done much TV before that, I remember thinking, well, I'm definitely going to be the outsider for this. So I'll just go along and just... you know, enjoy it and be myself. And that's obviously, is a great way to do well in something, because then you're just way more relaxed, and if you feel like you've not got anything to lose. So I did that, and then, they got in touch and said, yeah, you're in. We want you, and,
wow.
and we'll start filming soon. So that was great, but like I say, it's not something that is necessarily on the path of a... of a comedian usually. So it's like one of those. It's one of those things that comes along out of nowhere, and it's like a brilliant sort of bonus to your career, and it helps with loads of other things because it's a great credit, and it gets you more well known, and it gets you other things. So really lucky, and it's been fun. Yeah, it's been great.
Hi, I'm George Lewis, and welcome to Extra Gear, the show that gets under the Top Gear bonnet to find you more cars, more unseen footage, and a brand new dipstick. That's me. Tonight, we talk to Chris about having the FXXK in Daytona to himself. We find out what all that dead goat tossing was about in Kazakhstan. And a true Extra Gear exclusive, we show you the very first victims of the new reasonably fast car. And Chris proves that Volvos aren't just about reliability. He takes this V60 Polestar around another airfield, but this time with the bonnet down. That's right, we're back, better than ever. This is Extra Gear.
No, it's good that, well, that's the thing as well, isn't it? It's the main thing is don't try and be something you're not. And if you try and if people are talking cars and you know people watching the show. I mean, a lot of people watch the show and probably don't even care about cars. I mean, especially the main Top Gear show. I mean, you know whether it's the old gang or the new gang, it's like, you know, most of the time no one can, you know, you're sort of fast forwarding the car reviews to get to like the crazy challenges and stuff.
Yes.
You know, so that's why it's you know, become the, you know, one of the most popular shows in the world is all that, the interaction and the banter and the fun. So I think if you tried to make out like you're a car expert and just sort of fell to, you know, the people watching would sort of call you out on it. So yeah,
that's what I was terrified when I started, because I thought, I don't imagine Top Gear fans are the most forgiving people. Like, you know, if I went to do a gig and someone said to me, "Oh, it's like 90% Top Gear fans in there," I'd think, "Oh shit." So I was a bit worried about that. But it, exactly as you say, as long as, I think the point of having me there, and the point of they wanted a comedian there, because it's certainly not a comedy show, but I think having someone there to ask the experts questions from maybe a more normal person, that was the technique. And actually, so being on the show, I was never like, you know, a car fanatic, because I always sort of thought there's no point in me getting into something that I'm never going to be able to really enjoy. Like, I understand if you're a multimillionaire and you're into cars, because you can then play with all these toys, and like, you know, if you're Chris Evans, that's a great hobby to have, because you can play around with. But I always thought there's no point in me getting into, because I can't. It'd be painful, because I'd never be able to do any of the things I wanted to. But then being on the show, you're around all these incredible, incredible cars and stuff. So you can't help but get more into it.
And has it got you into cars a bit more since going on the show?
Yeah, I certainly. There's loads more I enjoy about cars and the opportunity. I mean, I do find driving fun as well. I mean, it's just not to let myself get too carried away, because I can't afford the Lamborghini yet.
Yeah, maybe when you get on the big boy show rather than the kids table. Yeah,
that's
right.
It is very much like that. That's the setup.
It's like, and turn over to BBC. You know, no, I do like extra shows though, because, you know, especially if you know, it's like, you know, it's like a bonus feature from a DVD, isn't it? If you love this stuff, have more of it. Great.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think they're a real thing now, aren't they? I mean, like, we always watch. I mean, I don't know if you're a fan of Bake Off, but we always watch Extra Slice
or whatever,
after that.
Yeah.
And those bits at the end of
Attenborough programmes as well. I always oh, really yeah. like watching them because it's just like, yeah, yeah, it's as you say, if you enjoyed that, then you can get even more nerdy about it over on BBC Three.
It's like when Supersonic was shown over Christmas and I was did a bit of marketing. I literally went, because Supersonic and Oasis were trending, and I literally went and liked every... I didn't reply to them all. Say, Oasis podcast! But I literally went and liked pretty much every tweet that someone had done.
Oh, so really?
Just said, oh, there's an Oasis podcast. Because, and I just put it out there and said, look, if you liked that 2 hours,
yes,
come over here. There's about 60 hours.
Yeah, we've got 60 of the bastards. Come on. Yeah. Well, that's what's good. Yeah, that's great as well, because that is, I think this has been discussed before as well, but that, I mean, I absolutely love that documentary. I think it's fantastic. But it's true that afterwards you're thinking, okay, you've given me a very small part of the story there. Yeah. I think that was the right decision, because I think it makes for a really great film, and you get to really enjoy a lot of detail which you wouldn't if you had to span the whole of Oasis. Yeah. But it does. I think it would leave people wanting to go deep in other areas of Oasis as well. So good idea.
No, well, I was actually listening back to an old episode the other day, and I was saying there about, oh, Matt Whitecross has been in touch and will hopefully book something. That was like 7 months ago. I figured it out, but yeah. I'll be like, I'll forget about it. And then I'll say, oh, Matt, are you around? He goes, oh, I'm in America for 3 weeks. Then I'll forget about it. And then, yeah, so anyway, but no, I mean, I basically, he needs to go and do part two, you know, and do the, do the post Nebworth. I mean, even if they, I don't think obviously it won't do as well, because that was the key part, you know, those were the key years.
Yeah.
But still, you know, so you probably wouldn't say, you know, do a 2 hour film covering, you know, Be Here Now and Standing on the Shoulder, and then another 2 hour film covering the last 6 or 7 years. You'd have to, I think, cover it all off in that last two, but it's probably not going to happen. But
yeah, I know.
I'd love it.
It's always like, I don't know, like, fans like us, we think, well, why wouldn't you do that? You know, this is what we want. But I suppose if you're, especially if you're the director, and you've made something which is incredibly well received, and people love it, you move on and do something else, don't you? But I'd absolutely love it. Yeah.
And I suppose as the casuals, like, if you're a casual Oasis fan, you're probably not as bothered. Like, for instance, if there was a Duran Duran documentary, I would not be bothered about hearing about the stuff they've done in the 90s and the 2000s. I just want to hear about the 80s romantic stuff.
True,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, we're saying it's an outrage. You know, there's good stuff in Don't Believe the Truth. But,
yeah.
You know, ultimately, you know, they've got to play to the crowd, haven't they?
Yeah.
And I completely agree with what you said. If they had tried, if they'd said, you know, in the last 20 minutes, oh, and by the way, then they carried on, then they sat Bernard and Gwigs in, and they got Tony Bennett. and then they split up in 2009. You know, that would have been a disservice. I think doing it like they did was like, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, fair enough. Good. Well, I'm pleased we agree.
That's sorted then. We both agree.
we can now move on.
So this guy picks us up in a van, and he's going to be our roadie, Jason Rhodes.
Yeah,
he's a brush.
Smart as a fucking
dick. Mark has got in touch, went, right, I want to come to Amsterdam. I went, yep.
And I said to him, all right, nice to meet you, fucking forget that. Did they give you a float? And he's saying, no, it's for petrol, so never mind petrol. And we took the float off him and then spent about an hour driving around Manchester getting drugs and then set off.
Get on the ferry. I don't know how we get on the ferry, because we're pissed, but we get on this ferry.
As fate would have it, there was a load of West Ham fans on this overnight ferry. It's got a casino on it and a fucking nightclub.
The Thursday night ferry to the Dam. Who goes to Amsterdam on a ferry for the weekend? What kind of clientele?
The drink of choice for a few hours, champagne and Jack Daniels slammers. The next thing is that sporadic fighting is breaking out all round us, really. Liam is very excited by the prospects of a lot of chaos going on, and he goes and joins in.
Yeah, it was fucking mayhem, man. I loved it.
You can see him running through the windows along the deck. He's having a great time. He looks like he's in a school playground chasing leaves.
Liam at one point said they ran through a casino and he flung all the roulette shit off the table as he was running past.
Then there's a fight broke out and all I remember was it was a bit Benny Hill.
The next time I see him, he's still running, but he's got policemen running after him.
Someone's punched someone, someone's kicked someone, someone's got nicked, and then we're handcuffed, sent down to the bottom of the boat. We get locked up.
Woke up next day, and I spoke to the customs, and I said, look, you know, I'm kind of missing four people. Do you know where they are?
We were heading back, not having any money. Couldn't phone anyone, couldn't do nothing.
I can remember getting to the hotel and having to ring Marcus and Alec, and they're going, you fucking what? You what?
And he says, you've fucking blown it, you've blown it. But that was punk rock, man.
Management, fuck them. They would listen to a word them clowns said anyway, you know what I mean?
I call McGee, and I'll never forget this, and this is another reason why I love McGee. I said, are you sitting down? I've got some news. Everybody's been arrested. The only word he said was, brilliant.
A hell of a start, that, innit? That's great first day at work. Love it.
Oasis were deported from Holland last week after they were involved in a drunken brawl on a cross-channel ferry. The Creation Act were forced...
I thought it was great. That's how I want my rock and roll stars to act. Stick up for themselves, get in a bit of shenanigans, and that's it. We live to fight another day. To me, it felt right.
So, yeah, so what's happening in the world of George? So you got gigs coming up?
Yes. I'm just getting prepared. So as you may or may not know, but, like, every year there's the Edinburgh Festival, which is sort of a month-long of shows in... I mean, that's not till August. But so I'll be doing my full show there, so it's an hour long show, and I'll be doing that for the whole month. So at the moment I'm just doing sort of early previews of that. So I've got, I think my next big one is at Leicester. I've got the Leicester Comedy Festival, that's on the, I think it's the 22nd of February, and that's, yeah, that's one of the first runs out of this new hour long show. It's called A Man, A Plan, A Girl With A Fake Tan, and it's it's about sort of me growing up at that time, sort of in the 90s and 2000s in Stockport, and what life was like, and me trying to get a girlfriend unsuccessfully. But yeah, so that's sort of like, that is always you know, a huge focus in stand up is that hour-long show every year, and then other than that, it's, yeah, touring all over the place. I'm on tour at the moment with another comedian called Tom Allen, and yeah, we're doing quite a lot of dates, and yeah, so most of the time it's gigging, and then in the daytimes it's writing and doing other things, like I've been filming a few things recently, but then it's, you never know, because you film some things, you film like pilots for TV programs and things like that, and some things come off and some things don't. So it's always best to... It's like with Mastermind, I didn't want to tell anyone until it was... Even when it was filmed and even when I had the trophy, I was like, let's make sure they don't, at the last minute, change their minds and not put it on TV.
Exactly.
So, like, it feels like it's an exciting time with quite a few things going on, but... Yeah, so hopefully it'll be a good year. And also some radio stuff as well. Like, I do a bit of writing for some of the comedy programmes on BBC Radio, and I love that as well, because that's like a different skill as well, which is a great thing to do. So, yeah, pretty busy. And I had my hair cut today.
Cool. Good. So. Yep. You're going short, Liam's going short, you're going short.
I did consider that when I saw him, I thought, but... you can look. I remember when I was probably about 12 or 13 or something, I had a skinhead, and you just look like a thug, don't you?
or like you, yes.
Well, yeah. Or yeah, exactly. Yeah, the boy in the striped pajamas. That's.
I was, you know what, I was going to say concentration camp.
Yeah,
I
did it for you.
I'll let you go.
Because I
there.
Thought you were going to say that. So I'll take that bullet. I mean, they're your listeners.
Well,
You've got to keep them. They've got to like you going forward.
exactly. That guy was horrible, wasn't he? But so you wanted the Liam cut, but you got a skinhead. You had to wait for it to grow out.
Oh yeah, I did. So, oh god, I mean, but I've had some terrible haircuts over the years. Do you remember? I don't know if this was, because sometimes you talk about these things and you're like, no, that must have just been where you were from. But I remember a haircut where it was a complete skinhead, and then you just had a fringe. I mean, it sounds awful. It was just a really long fringe, and everywhere else like a number one.
Yeah, that to me, it brings up like mid-90s sort of people at fairgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, the rougher kids that you'd sort of on the waltzes.
Oh,
you
God,
know,
yeah, it is that, isn't it?
I'd stay away from them, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah, that's, don't tell me you had that haircut, did you?
No! What? God, no. I mean, of course not.
Well, but when you were working on the Twister, it looked really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Bag of candy floss, man. I think for a lot of time I had a sort of Oasis-ish haircut, but I've always had curly hair, so it was. I remember it. It was a real frustration. I mean, I like having curly hair now, but I remember at school it was a real frustration that it wouldn't sit in the same way. I always remember as well. I mean, I think you've spoken about it before about it being a dodgy look, but I remember loving Liam's sideburns. I always thought, when I can grow sideburns, that's what I'm doing.
Well, that was the big sideburns for, you know, because I'm 7 years older than you, was the with Supergrass.
Yes, yeah, you know, exactly, yeah.
When those guys came out. And the thing is, they were only like bloody 18, so they're only a couple of years older than me.
Yeah, it's infuriating, isn't it?
And like, why can't I get pushy, you know, noddy holder, you know, sideboards like that?
That's
fantastic. Not fair.
I thought that. I had to wait till 25 to shave. Annoying.
No, that's good. No, well, that's the thing. It was a case of, you know, there has been numerous times when I've gone into a hairdresser's with a picture of Liam Gallagher.
Yeah.
I walk out and go, well, why don't I look like Liam Gallagher now?
I know. I always.
I want my money back.
I always think that because I always. Because you see. As well, like I absolutely love the look and the mod look as well. But I sometimes spend a bit of time around like Carnaby Street, and there's always sometimes you get some of the like real old boys who are still rocking that look, and it's like it's cool, but it never looks like quite like Liam or Paul Weller and stuff. It looks like you've dressed them up, you know, fancy dress.
It's a tough one to pull off. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you'll see that at like Mod May Days and things like that, and you think some people have just got it and they look spot on, and some people it's a real tough one. I mean, Liam can get away with pretty much anything.
He can,
you know, he's just one of those people that he's a mannequin. You know, he can just do it. But yeah, whereas I think. Maybe if I tried that, no, probably wouldn't
kill me. I know, no. It's annoying. But yeah, I thought that, because I think he looks good with I saw him at, went to the Alexandra Palace gig recently.
Oh, cool.
And that was brilliant, actually. I don't know why I wasn't, I don't remember being like super excited about it. I was hoping it would be good, but I think like the last time I'd seen BDI a couple of times, and it was like they were all right, but it was like, oh, it's not Oasis. But I think we got the tickets to see Liam a bit last minute, because we had some for in the summer, so we had Liam in the summer and got tickets for Noel as well. But I can't go to the Noel one now because I'm going to be doing like some gigs in
Dubai, and I can't go to Liam because it's about the time that my wife's going to give birth. So you gotta be there, haven't you? So we decided to try and go to this, to the Alexandra Palace one. So we got tickets last minute, and we went along, and I thought it was fantastic. And he kept apologising for his voice, but I thought he sounded brilliant. I thought, he can sound bad sometimes. If his voice is a bit knackered, he can. But I thought he sounded fantastic. I thought it was brilliant.
Well, you can't do, you know, like we've said it on here before, but, you know, if you treat your instrument that badly, you know, the way he arches his back and wrenches the words out, if someone's doing that to a guitar, the guitar will break.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yet, but he can't, it's like, there must have been people over the years saying, stop, you know, sing from the diaphragm.
Oh,
do these exercises and stuff like that. But he must just, like, punch him in the face and go, no.
Yeah, I know.
This is how we do it.
I think that when you it's in one of the books, isn't it, when he has to go to the doctor and they sort of look up his nose and stuff and they're like, you've got to stop putting stuff up there, mate. You've got to... and I think, but I suppose there's another point where it's like, they say how it's frustrating for him because all the rest of the band, after a gig, they put their instrument in a case and then they can go out and get smashed, whereas his instrument's on him all the time, getting damaged by his lifestyle. But I thought he sounded brilliant, yeah. It's good to hear it back. Yeah,
it's always. Yeah, no, it was great. I haven't caught him yet. I didn't get any of the earlier gigs, but I'll be at Finsbury Park.
Ah, yes, that's the one. That's the one I'm missing, I think. Enjoy that. Nice one.
You can listen to the Oasis podcast afterwards, and you can, it'll be like you were there.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, in the maternity ward, I'll be listening to the podcast.
There you go. That's quite a... It's quite a strange sensation to think that you might be listening to that while at the other
that
end.
That might be weird.
But, yeah, good. All right, cool. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. But thanks so much for your time. It's really good fun. Really good. Really good to talk. And and well done again on Mastermind.
Ah, thanks,
man. Well done for.
Thank you.
Yeah, awesome.
And nice one great for stuff. Doing this as well. Like I've really enjoyed them. Keep them coming, man. I think they're brilliant.
Oh. I'm trying my best, mate. But cool, good. All right. And as always, we end with an Oasis song. So you're going to pick something really obscure and different than no one else has picked, haven't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Because there's the obvious ones, like, so I got married earlier this year. First dance was Wonderwall. Obviously, I'm not going to pick that. Champagne Supernova is my favourite song of all time, but I'm not going to pick that. What I think I'm going to pick, so there's two songs. I think one of them might be picked before, so you tell me, but one of the songs that I absolutely love is Let's All Make Believe. And I'm just, I just can't figure out why that isn't, I think it is amongst Oasis fans, but I can't figure out why it's not just a world famous. I just love it. And I love the sound on it. I think it's incredible. And I've just got visions of 10 years, 20 years from now, they come back and that's the first song that they do together. I don't think that it would work like that, but I just think that would be perfect. I'd probably cry. So let's all make believe that we're still friends and we like each other. Let's all make Has someone had that before?
I've talked about it quite a bit before, and I've played it before, but
because that'd be a good one.
I don't think anyone's chosen it. But go on.
And
the other
one that I was going to say is, well, it's Oasis's version of Hey Hey My My. Because that was, I'm pretty sure they played that at that. Well, pretty they did. They played it at that gig, which was my first gig. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think we should go for, man?
Well, who knows? I'm going to leave it open, and then James in the future, when he's doing this editing, will make that choice.
Okay, so, nice one, future James. Don't mess it up.
All right, so I'm going to drop in. This is Trouble by Champagne. And on that positive note, George, thank you for your time.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
So thanks again to George Lewis. It was really good fun to talk to him. And make sure you check out his website. And if you can go and see him live on those dates, then make sure you do, because he's a very funny bloke and a very nice bloke. So that will do it for the Oasis podcast this week. Thank you very much for listening and subscribing and downloading and liking and retweeting and everything else you guys do. As always, special thanks goes to the patrons, because they put their money where their mouth is, which is Cindy, Andrew, Simon, Remy, Jim, Richard, Amy, Mark, Dana, Mike, Fraser, David, Jeff, Davey, Jason, David, Casey, Dan and Alex. You guys truly are rock and roll stars. You can be cool like them and become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod. It's where I post articles by myself and by Richard and by Kyle. And I also post things early as well. So the interview with George from today was posted, I think, pretty much a week ago. I'll just throw things up every now and then. So if you wanted to be the first to hear these bits and pieces, then make sure you're supporting. Anywhere from a dollar gets you done. So, you know, what's that, about 70p or something a month? I think most of you can stretch to that. And the crazy thing is, if everybody supported at like $3 or $5 a month, I could actually do this for a living, which would be ridiculous. But anyway, there you go. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me at oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts are available, along with other merchandise, at TeePublic, and please subscribe and review on iTunes. And we've had another new review, which was from Russell Osborne, who said, "How did I miss this? How did I miss this podcast? Oasis fan since Definitely Maybe, going to be playing catch up, but I'm looking forward to listening to what I've missed and learning more about the band." Well, welcome aboard, Russell. Although by the time you hear this, if you're doing the journey from episode one, then it's probably in about 6 months' time or something. So who knows what's happened. So anyway, as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young.